Chaim Elojin used to mention many, many times that he would travel from time to time to Vilna. Of course, his Rebbe was the Vilna Goyen, so when the opportunity afforded itself, he would always try to make his way to Vilna to be able to meet the Goyen. And he would take the opportunity, seize the opportunity, when he is able to see the Goyen, he would write down all of his questions, he would prepare all of the various fakers and shilas that he had, and knowing that when the time comes, and he'll meet the Goyen, and he'll present all of the shilas, and he'll receive answers to all of those particular questions. It turns out that a particular time that he visited the Goyen happened to be an Erev Shabbos, and being it was Erev Shabbos, it was already after Chatzos, so he did not bother at all to go to see the Goyen, because he figured it's already after Chatzos, and the preparations for Shabbos is due. He goes to the mikveh and prepares for Shabbos and so on, and it's Chesed Mazel, we'll see the Goyen later. Turns out that somehow that the Goyen found out, that the Vilna Goyen found out that Reb Chaim Talmud is here in Vilna. So he sends over a shliach, he says he should come to him, yes, before Shabbos, right before Shabbos. He comes very, very quickly. He finds the Goyen is always learning. There is no such thing, concept of Dittel Torah by the Goyen. And the Goyen is sitting and learning. And matter of fact, the Goyen had something wrapped around his head. And that was from deep concentration in an area that the Goyen found difficulty in terms of understanding. Can understand when the Goyen had difficulty was on the level of the Goyen, his kind of a difficulty. Not the usual difficulties that the average person encounters when learning, but this is a difficulty, the Vilna Goyen's kind of level of a difficulty. And with such deep concentration that he would apply himself, he actually had tremendous headaches. But that didn't stop him. As a result, he had to bind his head with some sort of a bandage or something around it. And it was wrapped around his head, pushed to be able to contain, to make it easier for him. And Reb Chaim arrives at the Goyen says to him, I need your help. Goyen says to him, I need your help. He says, I'm involved in a situation which I can't find the proper answer, the proper tshuva, this particular shaila in my learning. And I figure, after all, you are a great Talmud Chacham, even though it was a Talmud, he says. You never know who will have this Yad Yishmayim and Hashemayim to be able to solve the problem. And therefore, the Goyen says to Reb Chaim, maybe I could not solve it myself, but as they say, two heads are better than one. Let's discuss it together, and maybe, who knows, maybe you'll come up with a certain idea, and we will arrive at the proper pshat. And so on, they go and they begin to learn. And this was, you realize, there's Erev Shabbos already. Erev Shabbos after Chatzos. And the Goyen didn't matter. This was his whole life. And they started, and the Goyen presented him the situation. And Reb Chaim gives an idea, and the Goyen rejects it, and so on and so forth. Ultimately, the Goyen begins to smile. Tremendous, tremendous smile. And he says, Reb Chaim, you see, now that we learned the union together, I came upon the pshat. A tremendous, tremendous simcha, and he says to Reb Chaim, now I am able, he says, maybe to take something in my mouth, because it will be mechazik, my koiches. In other words, what does it mean? Reb Chaim finds out that the Goyen did not eat for 3 days. The Goyen did not eat for 3 days. This was the Goyen's dedication and commitment to learning. That this was a stumbling block in front of him, his whole life sort of came to a stop. There was nothing else. This is what he had to do. He had to solve this particular problem. Chaim went very, very quickly to find and to bring me something to be able to be time before Shabbos. So, and then, of course, both together were ready for Kabbalah Shabbos, the Simcha. So that's just another indication of how Gedolei Yisrael of yesteryear, how they grew, how they materialized, and why they were takizoicha to be the true Gedolei Yisrael, whose Torah we learn to this day. Because this was a very, very special commitment that they had in dedication to Torah. I'll just mention one more nekuda. That regarding the extreme siyata d'shemaya that Reb Chaim had in being miyasid, founding Yeshivas Volozhin, again, which is considered to be the mother yeshiva of all the yeshivas. It involved a lot of financial investments and situations, and of course, Reb Chaim did not have any of his own money at all, and he was not a professional fundraiser and wouldn't have the time to run around. We spoke about it a little bit last week also. And one of the good fortune that Reb Chaim has, this is like heaven sent. In those days, you know, land and property were under the jurisdiction of what they called the Puritz, or the Lord, the Squires. They were actually literally not just landowners, they owned villages. And everything, the whole Hanhoge of those villages were under the jurisdiction of the squire or the lord, and they had tremendous power. They could imprison people. They could even to the point of they're taking the life of a person. Certainly, they owned their money and so on and so forth. They didn't pay the rent on the properties that were rented out. A tremendous, tremendous power in those days. So it's interesting. It was one of the Hasidei Umas Olam. Literally, one of the Hasidei Umas Olam. His name was Count Joseph Tishkevitz. Very interesting thing. And this Count Joseph Tishkevitz was a Polish goy, and came from a very aristocratic family, and they was tremendously wealthy. It's not just that the town of Volozhin was under his ownership, so to speak, but also they say that he had something like 81 villages, in addition to many, many other different holdings that he had, land, forests, and so on and so forth, which was... He had extreme dedication to the yeshiva, and he would contribute endlessly, would contribute to the yeshiva, and it was because he tremendously respected Reb Chaim. As a matter of fact, he would discuss many of his business dealings. From time to time, he would go and discuss with Reb Chaim, and he appreciated and, not only that, honored Reb Chaim's advice. He considered that to be very, very important. Also, when there were situations in current events that took place, we also ask Reb Chaim, what is the opinion of what's going to happen politically? We ask Reb Chaim. So just here's one of the things that is said in one of the legends that regarding this relationship between Reb Chaim Volozhin and this count, Count Tishkevitz, it is said that he comes to him, the count comes to visit Reb Chaim, and he tells him that there's news in the papers at that particular time, news that there's a mazel tov that comes that the king of Poland, that a third child was born. A third child was born to the king of Poland. The king's name was Paul, and the child's name was Nikolai. Nikolai. Reb Chaim hears it, and he breaks out in a sweat, and you can see a tear or two coming from his eyes. And the count, as you can understand, he said, what's bothering you? The king had a son, Mazel Tov. He had a third son. Why are you so concerned about it? And Reb Chaim says to him, he says, my concern is because the name of this third child starts with a nun, Nikolai. And we have a Messiah, he says, that whenever there is an emperor whose name starts with a nun, was a tzayir ha-Yehudim, was someone who oppressed Jews and caused them endless, endless troubles. Nimrod, Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, Nero and Caesar, and Nikolai, and we know about sort of Tsar Nikolai and so on and so forth. So his prediction is not unwarranted. This is one of the mice of Reb Chaim. Just to mention that this relationship that Reb Chaim enjoyed with this count who supported the yeshiva so generously happened mamish in the year, in other words, the year that Reb Chaim founded the yeshiva was between Kesel Yosser, it was a Sergei Mechuvah, it was between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That was the groundbreaking of the yeshiva's Volozhin. It was Maseret Mechuva in 1803. And was that particular year where the ownership of Volozhin was transferred from a previous count into the ownership of Count Tishkevitz. As if Minashemayim, he was sent, you founded a yeshiva, you need someone who's going to help you. And Minashemayim, they sent him. It's to see the Haptoch of the Shochach Mipizaroi, that the Volozhin takes care and makes sure that the Torah will always continue one way or another. So, Rabbi Sai, we go at the end of Perek Yudalit. I think it's Kedai to, before we start, because we were discussing Maisa Dibur Makshava. I'd like you just to look at the sheet before we start. Just two items. There's very fascinating items. Two items regarding just this Inyan of Makshava. And this is extremely, extremely helpful. The first item, as you can see, is taken from which the title is written on top. It's Mitech Michtav Haskoma. It's a letter of a Haskoma written Agoyin HaTzadik Yehuda Siegel from Manchester, the famous Mashgiach, well-known Mashgiach. So he wrote it, which was in a sefer Eitzes V'Hadrochis. And the Mashgiach was solicited to give his Haskoma, to write his Haskoma on the sefer, and he wrote the Haskoma. And in the middle of the sefer, in the middle of that Haskoma, actually, so we have here the words of the Mashgiach of Yehuda Siegel. Let me just repeat again, but many, many years ago, speaking to Avshalom Shadron, again, when he was here in Queens, he spent quite a number of years. He would come on and off to come to visit over here. And the discussion came. He considered himself to be a Talmud. He considered himself to be a Talmud of Reb Yehuda Siegel. And the matter of fact, when Peter Siegel was nifter, he said, I have to look for a new Rebbe, he says, Rav Sholem said. Famous Maggid, of course. I remember he's sitting at the table here in the house, and we're discussing with Yehuda, and I said to him, what is it in particular that you consider the godless of Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Siegel? And before he said anything, he says, in my opinion, he says, a third of the world for sure is standing in his chus. Adritul zichet is the way he said. A third of the world, he says, is on his chus. No question in my mind. That's what Rav Sholem said. So here we have a little bit of a quote of Rav Yehuda Siegel. And he's talking about Eichel his gaber al hirhurim, giving a little bit of advice how to be able to banish and remove immoral thoughts from the mind. You fly into the in a person's mind without control. Right? It just happens. Either you see something inappropriate, or it just comes into your mind anyway. So what is the Eitzah? So here you have this Nisoyim, and here you have this challenge, here you have this Mochoma with yourself. So he writes as follows. Kivin shenikva betkifis, Eitzel ben Toyer shein eroyse, being that a ben Toyer so strongly does not want, sheyoviloi shum hir klal uklal, a ben Toyer hopes they would not be challenged and tempted with these types of immoral thoughts, as a result being that he's so anxious, something that we mentioned last week, being that he's so anxious in order to block out these thoughts, so v'kasher bo'u hirhurim asurim, so when these thoughts in fact do come into his mind, was marich mechoma kenegdo b'chol koichos. What he does is he takes all of his strength and all of his power to try to fight off those thoughts. He's there, he says, from that itself, from this extreme mechoma, to try to banish those thoughts, he says, etzloi, this is human nature. That the more you try to get rid of those thoughts, they're just going to try just to come back. You throw it out from the right side, it comes in from the left side. So therefore, what is a person supposed to do? So what is the answer? So the nochus moed lo da. So Yehuda Siegel said, it's important to know, mashikosav b'sefer derech b'kudecho. It's written, the sefer derech b'kudecho v'zeh l'shoinot. He writes, Da Yedidi, I wanted to know. Ke'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu bo b'trunyim b'riyosof. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not come with the impossible. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not ask for the person the impossible. And therefore, being that it's human nature, that all types of thoughts are going to fall into your mind, whether you want it or not. So Cholilo lachshoy al abayre, this is what he says. Sheyachshiv lo li obayim, that it would be considered to be a sin the very moment the fact that it came to your mind, that's not the avla. What you have to try to do is try to get rid of it, not to try to keep it. Because the fact that the machshavas, all of these machshavas came into your mind, this is against his will, this is an accident, this is beyond his control. This is a lotion of the Sefer Derech B'Kodecho. Because review this eagle further. The ikar is to try just to think about other things. You should try to do that. In the letters of Rabbeinu Rabbi Yisrael Salam to the Sefer Yisrael, Michtav Chopei, in the 25th letter. But the idea, the anxiety, that a person sometimes goes with all of his might to try with all his force to get rid of it, to try to insist it with that power, extreme power, that might work against him. You have to take its course in a slow fashion. And little by little, hopefully, if this is what he really wants, he'll have this Yaakov Yishmaya to be able to purify his mind. But again, what you see from here is the inyan of how to deal with machshavas. It's an art. It's something that a person has to learn and to know how to do it, like anything else. It requires skill, requires learning, and requires also practice, as we spoke last week. That a person should do certain exercises, not in these areas, in other areas of machshavas. Let him think about certain topics and then change his mind, being that he's not threatened, being that challenged. He'll be able to do it. But the more that a person actually practices the idea of switching topics in his mind from one to another and so on and so forth, a few minutes a day of exercises, so then when unwanted thoughts will come in his mind will already be used to being to switch the channel, just to go from one area into a different area. This, again, is, again, the Koyach of Machshavah. And finally here, before we start, is number two, is from Rav Dessler. And Rav Dessler writes in Michtam Elio, Chelikalos, on page 261, he writes as follows, to show again the power of machshava, how machshava controls the person. He says, ki yedua, it is well known, ki miyachsho yivodam pomim har be'lifne shinosoi. If a person before going to sleep you have to realize that certain people can get up without an alarm clock. Without an alarm clock. Why is that? Because in his mind, before he goes to sleep, it becomes carved in his mind, I have to get up 6 o'clock, I have to get up 5:30, whatever the time is. The fact that he carves it into his mind with such power, it becomes second nature to him that he will wake up. Look what he says. The person really thinks many times, that he's going to wake up in a certain time, he will wake up. And even though there's no real reason, why should he wake up by himself? Why should he wake up? The fact that he thinks about it many times, it becomes part of him. Poyelus instinctivis, instinctively, modern word. He says, af beli, he says, hasogish, without even any particular reason. This is the way it works. The machshove, basically, that becomes a reality. What a person really thinks about strongly, that is the mahus, that is the definition of that person. To the extent he wants to even wake up at a certain time, he'll wake up without anything showing him, if anything waking him. There's no reason why he's going to wake up. But that's the koyach, again, the koyach of the machshove. Okay, so we move on now, Rabbi Yisai. And we take a look here at the Nefesh HaChaim. This is at the end of Shaar Yudalut. In the conventional Nefesh HaChaim that Yoelim uses, it's Daf Mem Tes. Daf Mem Tes, towards the bottom, where he says, Ve'elu Hagimul Bechinois. Ve'elu Hagimul Bechinois. The end of Perek Yudalut. Ve'elu Hagimul Bechinois. What Rechaim now is going to tell us, and by the way, starting from here, the next few paragraphs into the next parak is a little bit Kabbalistic, but we don't want to skip it because on the surface, we should get a little bit of a feel of what God was taught and what man is all made about. We think this creation that Kodesh Baruch Hu created, man is not just blood, bones, and so on and so forth, but there's so much more in terms of what the reality of the greatness of man. So, Rav Chaim was talking about, again, in this perek, and together with previous prokim, is bringing out the idea of maise, dibur, and machshove. The koyach, again, maise, which is action, speech, and thought. Says Rav Chaim that the elo hagimul bechinois, that these three concepts, which are maise, dibur, machshove, which is action, speech, and thought, he says, hein klal habechinois pnimiyoy shel ho'odom, they correspond, he says. They correspond to three levels, as we'll see, to three levels of the human soul. Ma'ase dibur machshava corresponds to three levels of the human soul. Shehem hagimul bechinois, nefesh, ruach, u'neshama. So first, again, something that we already spoke about before, and we should familiarize ourselves, that there are three levels in the neshama. We call it neshama, but the truth is, it's not all neshama. It's nefesh, and there's a ruach, and there is neshama. These are three special levels. And as he pointed out, where does the power of action come from? Of course, the life force of a person is his neshama. The life force of a person, so which chelik of his neshama gives the person the ability to do action? Where does that come from? So B'chaim says, Ki amaisu mebchines ha-nefesh. Action corresponds to nefesh. Kimoy shekosuv, as the Pasuk says in Bamidbar, Bahanefesh asher tase. So what do we see? We see asiya. Action is related to nefesh. Or it says another pasuk. It says hanefoshois ha'oisois. So here again, we see that the idea, the concept of doing, the concept of action, that is connected with what? That's connected with nefoshes. The harbikiyotze and many other sukkim as well that show that the idea of ma'ase is connected to the union of nefesh. Well, let me just point out. Nefesh is the lowest madrega of the three levels. Of the human soul, nefesh is the lowest level. As a matter of fact, nefesh is what one might call the animal level, which in the Tanya refers to as the nefesh habahamis. Man basically has animalistic instincts. That is the basic of man. So the chelik neshama, which is the lowest level, is nefesh. Nefesh is the lowest level, which that basically is the animal level, which is the instinct of self-preservation. As the Pasuk says, as he points out, the Pasuk says, Ki hadom hu hanefesh. The Pasuk says, blood is the life. Right? Blood is the life. Ki hadam hu hanefesh. Shahanefesh Shoira, that chelik of the neshama called nefesh. Again, that chelik of the neshama, which is called nefesh, resides in a man's blood. That's what the Torah says, Ki Adam hu ha-nefesh. Where does the nefesh reside in? Because Baruch Hu put the nefesh into the human body. Where does it reside? It basically resides in the blood. Shahanefesh Shoira u'mislabish v'dam odom. Lochein, and therefore, being that it's in the blood, so it is ikir mishkano bekovei chekul adam. So particularly, it is concentrated in the liver. Because what is the liver? The liver is kulei dam. It's completely, it's coagulated blood, so to speak. That is what the liver is. And being that the nefesh resides in the blood, so which area? That is in the liver, says Reb Chaim. And umerutus hadam. And therefore, we have the blood circulation. Blood flows to all the limbs of a person, right? Which he acts and he moves. So the koyach to be able to move your arms, to move your legs, is because you have the blood circulation. The blood circulation is what contains the nefesh. The nefesh is in the blood, and that blood which contains the nefesh circulates the entire body. That gives the body its life force. To be able to move your hands, to be able to move your feet, to be able to move any part of the body. As he points out, it's again, merutzas adam. It is the blood flow, b'chol prote chelke hu evarim, kli hamaise, the evarim which are the kli hamaise, these are the kelim of action, hu hanoifilam chiyus hatznua v'haisayrus. It is this which gives the limbs the koich of chiyus, the koich of movement. Sheyuchlu lipoil v'lasay tisashu b'koicham. That they should be able to do that which they do. And as Reb Chaim points out, we know it's a simple fact. If for some reason, what happens when blood circulation stops in a certain limb, we know what happens. That limb ultimately dies. So as he points out, the imyumna, Reb Chaim says, imyumna merutas adam. If the blood flow will cease, right? It will not be a constant flow. The merutas adam will stop. As he points out, meiver echot, from even one single eiver, oiso eiver misyabesh, the aim boy shum tenu alas the shum dover. Whoever nace. So it's quite clear that without the constant flow of blood, the limb shrivels and it's immobilized and it dies. So again, so Reb Chaim tells us, so again, nefesh, which is the lowest level of the three levels of the soul, that is the chelik which gives the life to the human body. So by the way, we should mention, an animal also has a, quote, some sort of a soul. But he cannot compare it to man. What does the animal have? The animal has the lowest one. In other words, between nefesh, ruach, and neshama, we so far discussed nefesh, behemah has nefesh. But man is above the animal, that man has coming to the next level, which is ruach, and then even the higher, the highest level, which is neshama. So this is very important, three distinct terminologies, which is in all the Kabbalistic sources discusses. This is nefesh, ruach, and neshama. The human soul is made up of three levels. And we see again, we're going to learn about the function of these three levels. They have distinct functions. So here again, nefesh is the chelik, is the animalistic level, the animal level of the person's soul. That's the basic life force. That's what gives life to a person. When you say yetzias neshama, for example, when a nifter, a person dies, yetzias neshama, it's a figure of speech. It's really yetzias hanefesh. Because the chelik that gives him life, the life force, is the nefesh, which is the lowest of all three. That's the given basic life. Now, we also learned that the basic, the power of ma'isa, the power of action, that comes from nefesh. Says now Reb Chaim further. Now the hadibur, what about speech? Speech, says Reb Chaim, Nefesh Chaim says, hu mibchinas haruach. Speech parallels the ruach level of the soul. You realize an animal doesn't have the power of speech. An animal, the koyach hadibur, that's a man. Man is a medaber. You know why? Because an animal does not have ruach and certainly doesn't have neshama. Animal only has nefesh. Nefesh is what parallels action. Well, an animal has action. It can move, it can eat, it can do all the physical things. An animal does it. Why? Because it's nefesh. Nefesh corresponds to action. An animal has nefesh. The animal, of course, has action. But dibur, talking about the power of speech, that comes from the next level, says Reb Chaim. So dibur mebchinas haruach. Dibur already comes, and this parallels the ruach level of the neshama. From which the quote of the pasuk says in Shmuel, it says ruach Hashem dibur bi. The pasuk says that the ruach Hashem is what speaks, right? What speaks within me. So it's the ruach Hashem. We find that the inyan of dibur is connected to the inyan of ruach. We also find uberuach sefosov. It says, with Ruach Sefosov, which means with the breath, Ruach of his lips. Pasuk in Yeshaya. Again, we find that the idea of speech connected to the level of Ruach. And, in fact, Kemosh Yitilgim Inkulis al Pasuk. The Targum Unkulis says on the Pasuk, Vahi Hodom LaNefesh Chayo. So the Targum says, that really the word Nefesh there is just a general term. But the Targum specifically says, what does it mean man became a Nefesh Chayo, living being? The Targum says, L'Ruach Mamalo, a speaking being. L'Ruach Mamalo. Mamalo means to speak. L'Ruach Mamalo. So what does the Targum associate? When you're dealing with speech, it's Ruach. So you see that the idea of speech, the power of speech, the Koyach of Dibur, that comes from the level of Ruach. And Rav Chaim says something interesting. And if you want to try to observe it with your own eyes, you might be able to see a clue. That what? That speech comes through the realm or from the level of Ruach. And he says, because the Cheinir Le'ayin, in actuality, one is able to perceive it with the eye, that what? That Dibur is connected with Ruach. Ruach, so to speak, like breath, which we interpret. Because Shebechol Dibur She'odom Moitzi Mipiv Yoitze Ruach Vehevel Mahateh. This is the way it works. Whenever a person speaks, air comes out and breath comes out of his mouth. As a matter of fact, that's the whole secret of the vocal cords. It has all to do with breathing, singing, of course, everything else. Professionals know that, how to project the voice act. All to do with the technique and the training of proper breathing. That is what brings out the voice. That is what it is. And Rav Chaim says it in quite simple level. That from any dibur that comes out of a person's mouth, at the same time the dibur comes out of his mouth, breath comes out. Yoytze Ruach, he says, Behevel Mahapeh. So every word that you speak, it's just a whiff of breath, Ruach comes out of your mouth, and Umishkan HaRuach, and where is the seat of Ruach? That level of Ruach, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed a person, where is the seat? He says, Mishkan HaRuach Ikur HiBaleiv, it's in the heart. So we find out, Nefesh is in the blood, the Adam Hu HaNefesh, that's the lowest level. Ruach, and that, by the way, and Nefesh, let's remember again, Nefesh corresponds to Maisa, the Maisa corresponds parallels to Nefesh. Dibur corresponds to Ruach, and where is the seat of Ruach? That's Belev. And he points out, he says, because Ki Ruach Vehevel HaDibur, Ikroi Vereishisoi Hu'olam HaLev. Because ultimately, the source of it, the source of your breath comes in from within. Where are you breathing from? From the lungs, which the lungs is, which is always connected to the heart. The heart beats, and so on and so forth. So that is, again, Ruach connected to Dibur. Nefesh connected to Maise. Where is Machshava connected? Ma'aseh Dibur Machshava. Machshava, he says, that Bechinas HaNeshama. Thought, Machshava, that conforms to the Neshama level of the soul. The highest of all three, which is Neshama, and soon we'll see about Neshama. We'll find out a lot about Neshama, a lot, that we can understand. For us, it's a lot. Neshama is the highest level of all three, and that corresponds to the thought process. The ability to think, and not stump to think. Because we always give a man power to think. But in particular, the man is able to use his mind to perceive Chochmas Hashem, thoughts of Torah which comes down in the Shemayim, to be able to use the human mind, to use the Gashmis materialistic mind, to be able to perceive Chochmas Hashem, the knowledge of Hashem, that comes again from the Neshama level. The Neshama level, the seat of the Neshama is in the Moyach. We say, HaNeshama Shebemoyachi, the Neshama which rests in the Moyach. So Rabbi Chaim says, "Umachshove, thought, ubechinat haneshama." That corresponds to the bechinat of neshama. Shehi hamalamedes leodom deyo ubino b'toyrak doshe. In other words, it's not just toyr. Rabbi Chaim doesn't mean to say that the machshove of a man, of course, is only toyr. It's the machshove that all types of thoughts come from the same place. But the main purpose that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave a man in machshove is to be able to utilize the machshove for toyr, for das, and for bino. That is the main koyach of the machshava. The same machshava, of course, is used for other things which is necessary for life. But the main purpose and the power of the neshama is, of the machshava, is that through the fact that it's connected to the neshama, the mind, the machshava, is connected to the neshama, which is the highest level of all three levels, is in order to be able to perceive deyo bino b'toyrak doshe. Lochein, therefore, ikar mishkona, where does it rest? Where does the neshama reside? Ubenoyach. Therefore, in fact, that's the reason why the neshama resides in the brain. Because the brain, of course, is the organ of thought. Kli ha-machshava. That's what the brain is. The brain is the organ of thought. In other words, the Bechina of Neshama is above the Bechina of Ruach, and it's above the Bechina, certainly above the Bechina of Nefesh. All right, so basically this is the Nekudah that Reb Chaim here tells us. So we have, again, Ma'is Dibur Machshava. That's interesting. A person knows this instinctively. He moves his hand when he wants to. He opens his mouth and he speaks when he wants to. And certainly he thinks whatever he wants to. It does not come from the same sources. Because Baruch Hu endowed man with three different levels of soul. The lowest level, which is Nefesh, that is connected Ma'isa. That's which fuels the Ma'isa. That's what powers the Ma'isa. Ruach, which is the next level. It's the Koyach of Dibur. Ruach, breath, and so on, comes out of his mouth. And again, Nefesh is seated in the blood. Ruach, as he said, is seated in the heart. And finally, Machshava is the highest of all. The ability to think. The ability to think, which again is a very inyan meyuchet that man has. And not some to think, but to be able to think and to perceive and understand. Chochmas HaTorah. That is the power of Machshava. And that comes to him through the fact that Machshava parallels, matches Neshama. Which Neshama, again, is the highest of all three. It's the highest of all three levels. And this is the koyach of man. So, Machshava, Dibur, Ma'aseh, Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. So now, we move Rabbi Yisai into Perek Tezvav, because this truly is a hemshech. And this now, being that we have this Hagdom over here, we can now understand something very fascinating, because Reb Chaim Take now moves on as a hemshech, and now he's going to talk about Neshama. Neshama, which is the highest level. And we always confuse the term. We always talk about Neshama, Neshama, Neshama. He failed to realize that Neshama is already the highest level. As a matter of fact, we are more connected to Nefesh. We are more connected to Ruach. And we are less connected with Neshama. As we'll soon see from this parak, which Reb Chaim tells us. So we always talk about Yetzias Neshama. We always talk Neshama, Neshama, Neshama. That is the highest level. And man has the ability, by the way, to elevate himself to be even more connected to that highest level of Neshama. The degree or the measure of his level of Neshama, which is the highest of all three, depends on how a person, the effort and the direction that a person takes in his life will allow him to connect more and more to the chelik of Neshama. And here now, Reb Chaim goes on to explain to us. And he starts with a basic, basic question. If you, Nefesh, Rabbi Yisai, we translate, commonly translated, is Nefesh, the soul, the Nefesh. Ruach, breath, spirit. What is the translation of the word Neshama? What's the translation? A man has a Neshama, we say, yeah? What is the translation? What does Neshama mean? English. Neshama is a Hebrew word. What is Neshama? Chaim says Neshama really comes from the Shayrish, from the word Neshima, breathing. Breath. But that's a big problem, Chaim says. How can Neshama be called Neshama on account of the attribute of breathing, being that we have just said a moment ago, Neshama is the highest level of the soul. If Neshama is the highest level of the soul, so here it's related to Neshima. Neshima means breath, and breath, breathing, is a bodily function, and it's a physical thing. So how can you take the word Neshama, which is totally, not just simply spiritual, is the highest of the three levels of spirituality. In the area of soul, Neshama is the highest. So if Neshama is the highest in spirituality, how is Neshama related to breathing, which is bodily, which is physical, which is just the opposite direction? So how does the word Neshama take on the character of talking about breathing, meaning breathing, having something to do with breathing? How do we reconcile these two ideas? That's the basic question that Reb Chaim wants to explain to us. And his answer is an incredible, incredible answer. Let's take a look at the words of Reb Chaim. Some of the wording here seems to be a little bit confusing here, but that's his kasha. Chaim goes on to say, he says, V'chiyepole, he said, one may wonder, Haloi shem neshama perushoi u'neshima. The pirish, what is the translation? What does the word neshama mean? The word neshama means, he says, neshima, breathing. He says, v'harei nira le'ayin, and certainly he says, simply on a physical level, we can see, sheneshima sodom, when a person breathes, breathing goes from lower to higher. In other words, the breathing comes from the lung area, coming out through the mouth. It goes from lower to higher. Neshama comes from higher to lower. So it's obvious that breathing is a lower madrega, it's a physical aspect, which is no way on the levels of neshama. Neshama comes milmalo lamata, from above down here. Breathing comes from lower trying to go higher. So the question is, so how does neshama connect with the inyan of neshama with the breathing? And he says, "V'gam ki arehu bechinas oir choizer be'ena bechina al yoina." And even oir choizer means to say is, and even if you say that somehow our breathing is supposed to be a reflection, for example, the moon does not have its own light, but the moon somehow represents the light of the sun. It bounces it back. So maybe somehow you'll say that from our breathing, we are supposed to relate to the neshama somehow. But he says, but the eina bechina al yoina. But the act of breathing, certainly, that's not a high level. That's not a high level of Kedusha. So how do we, Lamaisa, why would we refer to neshama, which is the sublime, the highest of all levels, why do we connect it with the union of breathing? Look at Reb Chaim answers. Know what it means when we say neshama means breathing? He says, when neshama means breathing, he says, we have to understand, he says. The reason that neshama is called breathing, we're not talking about you breathing. Neshama means it means not human breath. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu's breathing. The mind-boggling thing is that you have a neshama, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is breathing, the neshama that you have, which means that you are actually part and parcel connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we talk about neshama meaning breathing, it's not human breath. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing the breathing. Your neshama is, as it were, forms of our understanding is HaKadosh Baruch Hu blows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu blows His breath into us. That's what it means. We contain a neshama. When we apply to ourselves the knowledge, the idea, we contain a neshama, what we are saying is we contain within ourselves a chelik of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We contain within ourselves the chelik of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Pasuk says, "Kamoshikosu vayipach be'apo of nishmat chayim." So we see the Pasuk says that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew into the nostrils, right? A breath of life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu blows into nishmat chayim, the soul of life, nishmat chayim. And therefore it means that neshama means that we have within ourselves a chelik of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's breath. And v'kvar himshilu razal. And the Nefesh HaChaim said the truth is that the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Aleph, already makes a connection between the neshama of a man directed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We find inyan ishtalshus haruach chayim b'yodom la'asiyas klizchukhes, which is something very fascinating, as we'll soon see. The Gemara in Sanhedrin compares, very fascinating, the Gemara in Sanhedrin compares HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blowing the neshama into man to a glass blower producing glassware. A glass maker blows, right? Has to blow in order to produce glassware. The Gemara in Sanhedrin compares HaKadosh Baruch Hu blowing into us the same way that a glass maker blows, as we see, when he produces glass. The Gemara says, and Reb Chaim will soon explain it in detail, but the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara talks about Tchis HaMeisim. When you Tchis HaMeisim, the Gemara says Kal V'Chomer. The Gemara says you can imagine we can make a Kal V'Chomer, a simple logic that there's such an idea of Tchis HaMeisim. Why? How can you sort of figure it out with logic that there's going to be such a thing that after death that a person can be resurrected, right, and become alive again? How can you learn it out? So the Gemara says, learn it out mikli zchuchis. Learn it out from a kli made of glass. Sha'amolon beruach bosav adam. How is glass made? Glass was made by the breath that was blown into the tube, as we'll soon see, by the glass maker. What happens when glass is broken? Glass is something that can be repaired. You go back to the same process with the fire, with the heat and everything, and then you can make it all fresh. It can be blown to bits and to pieces, take all the pieces together, and start blowing fresh. So if the breath of man can be reconstituted, so man, which was created by the breath of Hashem, certainly can be reconstituted. If glass, which is created by the breath of a human being, can be reconstituted, so man, which was created by the breath of Hashem, is that any less? So certainly the Gemara says it can be reconstituted. That's what the Gemara says there. The Bosav Adam, Sheberucha Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a man who basically was created through the breath of Hashem, Malachas Kama V'Kama, and so on and so forth. And now Reb Chaim goes out to point it more definitively. You see, the comparison of Hashem's blowing into us to the way the glassmaker blows into glass. And Reb Chaim tells us something very fascinating about how glass is produced. He says as follows. Reb Chaim says that the truth is ki amidin doim l'raya. Says our situation is compared to the following: kishenavchim. If we take note, v'nishimas piho umen b'kliat chichus the eight asiyosoi. If we basically will observe how the craftsman, the manufacturer, how he produces glass, how does he produce glass, you'll find out that he does it in three stages. The glass maker produces glass in three stages. How does he do it? So he says as follows. B'china Rishoina. He says the first step is kishin nishimat ha-hevel hu adayin toich piv. Koidem bo'u letoich cholol hashvayferes hachalula, he says. In other words, what Reb Chaim says is, the glassmaker, first he actually has to hold his breath before he blows it into the tube. That's not called yet breathing. In other words, he has to first fill himself with breath, and he holds his breath. Before he blows it into the tube, he has to first fill himself with breath. As he says again, he says, this is the hevel, which is a dying toich piv, Koidom boyoi, before it arrives, l'toicholo, hachveferes, that's the tube. Before blowing it into the tube, hachalulo, right, the hollow tube. He says, ein l'kroisoi od ele b'shem nishimim. All it is just a simple breath. Man fills himself with breath before he does anything. That is the first stage, that he holds his breath. Tabachin ha'shenis, what is the second chelik? The second chelik is that his breath will enter the tube. The second stage is that the breath will now enter the tube. Ha'shenis, kishenichnas ahevel ubo letoich hashvayferes, v'nimsheches k'moy kav, it's like a stream of air, right? Then it's called ruach. Very interesting thing. You know, when does the air that's blown, when does it arrive, when does it acquire the title of ruach? That's when it comes out of his mouth. When it's still in his mouth, it's not called ruach. It's called stam neshima. He says, a person gives a breath, takes a breath. That's called neshima. He took a neshima. And he blows it out, the stream of air that's called ruach. B'china ha'gimel ha'tachtoina, and ultimately, so now the stream of air is ruach. Now it goes into someplace. It goes into the tube. It's contained the tube. There's ha'gimel ha'tachtoina, and so finally he says, which is the third stage, u'kishiyotze ha'ruach mashvayferes otoich hatzchuchis. He says that when the breath goes from the tube into the glass, u'mishpashetes betoicho. In other words, it goes into the lump of heated glass, which expands and takes on the shape of the glass, right, that the glass blower wants to form. That's what happens. It takes by blowing it with the heat, and he blows it, and it takes on the shape that he wants it. Again, it expands. The air inside causes the glass to expand. Ashenatus kli kifirotin hamizagig. Mizagig is the glass maker, right? Oz machal yeruchoy. Then the blower stops. He stops blowing. The nikra oz nefesh. So then it's called nefesh. Nefesh means it now has come to its resting place. Chovat vayinofash. That's what nefesh means? Resting. No, that's the end. It's called nefesh. So what do you see? So you have three stages. Filling himself with air. Blowing it out. When he has air, it's called neshima. Stam neshima. When it comes out, the stream of air is called ruach. And finally, when it's inside, that's like nefesh. The B'chaim says, Kein b'dimim nazeh, so too you have the exact same three parallels in the human soul. He spoke about nefesh, ruach, and neshama. The B'chaim is followed. He says, Kein b'dimim zeh. The B'chaim tells us that the same three phases of glass blowing, they match the three levels of the soul, which is the gimel b'chinois. These are the three levels, naram. What's naram again? Nefesh, ruach, neshama. It's the common Kabbalistic term you'll find in Rosh Hashanah, naram. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, shem mushpoim kibiyochel, which these three things come from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, not from a glassmaker. These three levels of nefesh, ruach, neshama, they are mushpa, they are created from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, b'neshima tev yizbach shemoy, from his blowing. We have the glassmaker blowing on the one hand, and then we have a Kodesh Baruch Hu doing the blowing. So he points out, kibachinis ha-nefesh, remember, what was nefesh? Nefesh, we said, like over there by the glass. Nefesh is when the air is already inside the kli. Shalav vayinofash. That's also nefesh by us. The chelik soul that is in the body, and that's where it is, the lowest level, that's the nefesh. Nefesh is the chelik that resides in the body. Shebechinat ha-nefesh, that's the bechinat ha-chtoina, shuhi kula betoich gufa odom, which is totally, which is beguf ha-odom. So again, the chelik nefesh, we said that's the lowest level, that's the base level. That's the animal level. That which gives chiyus to the body. Without the nefesh, the body would be lifeless. So that is what gives the body life. And after he has the nefesh, at that point, he's only like any other balachayim. He's no different than any other animal. They also have the bechin of nefesh. The nefesh gives the koyach of chiyus. Man which has the nefesh gives him the koyach of chiyus. Then he goes further and says, bechin es ruach. But now what comes back when you have the bechin of ruach, the bechin of ruach is sort of like poured. In other words, the ruach goes on top of the nefesh. That's the next madrege. So the bechin of ruach says is sort of, it's like poured. It is like poured over. Milmalo, shechelik uktseo elyon shaloi, koshu v'nechaz lemalo, the bechina hatachtoine shalom neshoma. Ruach is poured from above, and he points out, the highest point of ruach touches the tip, the lowest point of neshoma. So let's remember, neshoma is on top of it. So if neshoma is on top of ruach, so the highest point of ruach only reaches where? The lowest point of neshoma. The highest point of ruach reaches where? The lowest point of neshoma. As he says, it reaches the bechina tachtoina. And what happens to this ruach? Mishtalcheles v'nechneses gam b'torach guf odom. This ruach also, he says, this ruach also goes into the body of the person, he says. It also goes into the body of the person. Mishkasheres shom b'bechina v'ol yoinish ol nefesh. That is the higher level of the nefesh. That is above it. Because there's a posuk in Yeshaya and so on and so forth. So we find out like this. They find out this point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, first of all, put nefesh into the body. Nefesh into the body, let's remember, has a direct connection with the body. Meaning, that would give the body life. Ruach does not give the body life. So what's ruach all about? So what does ruach do? Nefesh gives the body life. That's something that an animal also needs a nefesh. So nefesh gives the body life. It gives the human body life. It gives the animal world life. All the balachayim, they have nefesh. Man has now ruach. So what does ruach do? He's already alive. What ruach does is elevate the body to spirituality. An animal doesn't have that. An animal's called a gashmir. What gives the human body to be able to connect with ruchnius? Mitzad the nefesh, it's no different than an animal. And the same as an animal has a nefesh, and it remains only nefesh. That's all remains. It's only nefesh. So what makes different? Well, how is man different? Man is different because in addition to nefesh, which gives him life, so now he's a moving animal. What changes him? What elevates him to the next level? That's the chelik of ruach. The chelik of ruach. So the chelik of ruach really is to separate man, he says, from the animal world. That is the idea of ruach. That is what ruach does. Ruach elevates the human body. He's not just a living being like any other animal that lives. But now it gives the human body an ability to rise to a higher level. And then finally, he says, what is the essence of the neshama? Now look what he says about neshama, and we're going to find out something totally different than we always thought about it. We're going to find out now from Reb Chaim, the truth is, when we say man has a neshama, he has an influence of neshama, the neshama is so holy, it cannot endure to be inside the human body. In other words, we don't, quote, have a neshama within ourselves, says Reb Chaim. All the Marishan had it before he was chayte. Then his body was kulei kodesh, was pure. After the chayte of the Marishan, our bodies cannot contain, as a receptacle as it were, it cannot house the neshama. The neshama hovers over each human being, and there's sparks of the neshama over the head of each person to be able to connect to that higher force as well. So now we find out that within a person you only have the two levels. You have the level of nefesh, then you have the higher level of ruach. Neshama is something that you connect with. It's not something that's in your body. Let's take a look here. This is something that Reb Chaim reveals to us. How else would anybody know this? Omnom, v'chinat ha-neshama, says Reb Chaim. The truth is that the essence of the neshama itself is completely hidden. He says, the haneshima atma, that which God is brought with, so to speak, blue. Shepnimiyas atmuso mistateres behelom. It means it's totally, totally, it's primiyas, its essence, it's totally, totally hidden. Umekoyra baruch kibiyocho b'tach neshima atribis baruch shemoy. Of course, the source of the neshama, again, where does it come from? From the breath of Hashem himself. So the source of the neshama comes, of course, from the breath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and no part of it enters the human body. Look what he says. She'ein atzmois mehusa nichneses klal b'terech guf adam. This is an eye-opener. He's always thinking about a mensch chata neshama. You have a nefesh and you have a ruach. You don't have the neshama within you. The neshama is so high. It is so sublime. It is so pure. It's the actual breath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The human body is not capable of holding. It's not inappropriate, as it were. It's not a receptacle, a place that the neshama can find, as it were, comfort to use that. As he says, that is the koich of the neshama, it does not. But Adam Rishon koidem achet zocher la'atzmuso. Adam Rishon, you see, was the exception. By the way, that was the plan. The plan was when Hashem Taki created man, he blew the neshama, so to speak, into him, because then the body was pure, it was not tainted. An untainted body with so high a level of kedusha, on such a high level that it was capable to be able to hold the neshama, the breath of Hashem himself, or the Rishon himself, he was the one who was zeichet to that. He was the one who was able to have it. Ubesibet achet, but on account of the chet of Adam Rishon, nistalko metoichot. As a result, it was removed from him. So what's left? V'nisharet rak, v'nishara rak choyfefes olov. See what the B'chaim says. And therefore, all that remains is hovering over him. We find that from Abchaim, the neshama is not within the human body. The neshama is hovering over the person. Levad, Moshe Rabbeinu, Olav HaSholom, Shezocho La'atmusa Toif Gufoi. The exception, he says, is Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, was the untainted person, as it were. The Shleimus Adam, the perfect person. The Shlomo Melech, that Moshe Rabbeinu, was the only one to have the schus, to have the essence of the neshama to rest within his body. And therefore, look what Reb Chaim says, and therefore he is called Ishwalikim. Now we understand a new meaning. Now we can understand what Ishwalikim means. Why was he called an Ishwalikim? What differentiates him from anybody else? He's an Ishwalikim because Achelik of Hashem, the breath of Hashem is in him. As opposed to anybody else, it's only hovering over him. The neshama, which is neshima, the breath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is only hovering over each individual after the chet of Adam Rishon. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to come to that madrega, and therefore he is called the Ishalakim. Skip 3-4 lines, because that's simply, these are words of Kabbalah. We need Vizulosoi. Just go a little bit, go down. Vizulosoi means, besides Moshe Rabbeinu, because it's a hemshech, what he's saying before. Vizulosoi. He says, besides Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, there's no other human being. No one else is worthy of this. Besides Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody was worthy of this. What do we have? Anybody else? What do we have? What then do we have? You know what everybody else has? It's like, Rak Behirois Netsutse Oyer. All that we have is sparks that glow over his head. We have sparks of the Neshama. We have sparks that are misnoitz mimeno, that are glowing from the Neshama. And how much sparks do you have? How many sparks? Not the same by everybody, according to how much you're worthy. According to your level, according to your madrega, how much you are ready to be mekabel, how much you want to be mekabel, how much you prepare yourself. Kol echo lefi madregosoi ulefum shiur delay, according to his shear. So this is very, 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 very fascinating thing. And I'm concluding. You don't have it here, but I have the words of the Goyen on the Sefer Yetzirah Perik Aleph. The words of the Goyen, the Vilna Goyen, says as follows. He says, Be'odom ha'neshoma nelemes meyoyt. By man, by regular man, the neshama is totally hidden. The ikir chiyusoi shel odom, he says, and the life of a person is controlled, he says, by the chelik of ruach, nas ruach, man, which is above an animal. That's the schar and the oynish, because the spirituality, whether he does mitzvahs or not, that's by the ruach. By neshama, he says, v'aseichel hamelameid le'odom das, he says, rak b'shamayim. Interesting, the neshama, which basically we said is keneged machshava, we said before. Neshama is going to get machshava. That's really b'shamayim, like nitzaytzayt misnaytzayt in memeno alo odom. But you have sparks of that neshama which glow. And how much sparks do we get? As you pointed out, Reb Chaim says, as according to your madrega, how much you're worthy, that's as many sparks as you're going to get. So we find that again, a little bit of insight in how man is created, the koyach of his neshama, 3 levels of his neshama, and the idea in the avodas odom is to try to connect to that 3rd level to be as close as neshama as possible. Thank you.
little deep stuff here.